You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. As well, you can hear these podcasts at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. There are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner to English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of a collection of addresses and essays by Rudolf Steiner. It's Collected Works, Volume 217A, entitled Youth and the Etheric Heart, Rudolf Steiner Speaks to the Younger Generation. It is translated by Catherine Krieger. This is Part 4, which is an address, entitled How Can Anthroposophical Work Be Established at Universities? Concluding words at a student gathering during the second Anthroposophical Higher Education course, given in Dornach on April 9, 1921. At the initiative of German students, a meeting to discuss this question took place on the afternoon of April 9, 1921. Rudolf Steiner spoke the concluding words. Dr. Walter Stein has already pointed to the three most important things to consider here, whether or not you choose to organize. But there is one thing I would still like to emphasize. In a movement such as ours, it is essential to learn a bit from the past so as to avoid its mistakes in subsequent stages. To the extent that anthroposophy meets with understanding among students, and present forces and opportunities permit, disseminating the various branches of anthroposophy among students as positive spiritual content will be of primary importance. In our experience, real achievements depend on positive foundations. Years ago, as I told you yesterday, we attempted to establish a world association of sorts for anthroposophy. This association was intended to function entirely according to the rules governing formal organizations, but it never got off the ground. For the sake of the necessary cohesion and cooperation, the proponents of anthroposophy then joined forces to form the Anthroposophical Society. For the most part, these people were already actively involved with anthroposophy. If an organization is to survive, it needs a pre-existing content. As Dr. Stein suggested, students will need to work on problems of general interest, rather than simply extending our work on current anthroposophical issues in the narrower sense. Initially, of course, your work will not produce material for dissertations. Recently, students in their first few semesters have been asking me how they can relate anthroposophy to their specialized fields of study. What can they do to incorporate anthroposophical work into preparing to write their dissertations and pass the state exams? I have always told them that although I am available to offer advice, I really recommend simply getting through their official studies as quickly as possible. For their dissertation, or their state exam paper, or the like, I advise them to choose any academic subject that makes sense in the context of their studies. No matter what topic they choose, the anthroposophical approach to it will undoubtedly be diametrically opposed to any other approaches. I advise them to write their dissertation in a way that the professor will be able to understand and grade, but to keep a second notebook for the anthroposophical aspects they think ought to be included. I tell them to finish the dissertation as expediently as possible, submitting only the first set of papers. Later, the thoughts they compiled in the second notebook will be a real active contribution to anthroposophy. Significant specialized issues often come to light only through rigorous academic work on specific topics, but there is a certain risk involved if there is any lack of clarity in your collaboration with your professors. I do not recommend submitting anthroposophically oriented dissertations, which most professors will find unsuitable. They would simply slow us down in terms of your availability to work with the anthroposophical movement, and we need all the academically trained co-workers we can get. I do not mean this in the outer sense of needing people who have been given an official seal of approval. First, we need people with the inner discipline required for scholarly work, which of course is best learned by doing independent research of your own. Second, we need co-workers who are no longer students and will not be held back by concerns about completing their specialized studies. And we need them as soon as possible. Not surprisingly, this is a difficult situation, especially in Switzerland. In the first few semesters, of course, it is easy enough to join such a group if you are so inclined. But maintaining the connections you make there becomes more difficult in the final semesters, when you are busy with other things. In any case, what I wanted to say specifically with regard to scholarly contributions to anthroposophy is this. During this transition phase, you must produce two versions of your work. One your professors will understand, and one you save for later. Of course, I do not mean that you must reject any very specific opportunities that present themselves. Students certainly can be alert to such opportunities and take advantage of them to serve our movement. I almost do not know whether to hope or to fear that our good friend Professor Römer of Leipzig will be overwhelmed with huge numbers of anthroposophical dissertations, though I am sure he would be pleased. It would certainly demonstrate that he is not the kind of professor we were just talking about. At this point, however, we need to expand on the type of collaboration with students that we in Dornach have already discussed. You can work out the organizational details among yourselves later. It would be good if the Waldorf teachers, along with some of our other members, such as Professor Römer and Dr. Unger, would share their thoughts with you and give advice on topics for dissertations and other scholarly papers without compromising your individual initiative in any way. We are seeking an intimate exchange of ideas with you, though it need not take the form of an actual organization. The economic factor is very, very important. Our university system, actually our entire system of higher education, will suffer a great deal under current economic problems. We must realize that the only way to improve the situation is by building up institutions such as Der Kommendetag in Germany and Futurum here in Switzerland. These organizations will also restructure the economic situation of students. I assure you that these efforts are designed for rapid growth. We do not have the leisure to take our time. Economic organizations such as these must make rapid progress. Perhaps the most important thing students can do to help is to promote understanding of these issues. In other situations, we have seen students intervene successfully on our behalf with parents or relatives. It is not true that all students have only poor friends. And once a beginning has been made somewhere, the activity becomes self-perpetuating. Imagine it like an avalanche. If it gets off to a positive start, it becomes self-perpetuating. So please study the prospectuses put out by Der Kommendetag and Futurum, and try to get others to understand what we are attempting to do. This understanding is extremely difficult for older people to achieve. We have had nibbles from older adults who try to understand the intentions of Der Kommendetag or Futurum, but in case after case they could not break free of the old economic biases that led straight to economic depression. Like cats landing on their feet, they always fell back on these old biases. I believe the clarity of your understanding will have some effect on older generations. There is no other way forward. I assure you that as soon as these economic institutions of ours acquire sufficient means to work on a large scale, which is the only way to do any good, and as soon as we can overcome the heated resistance of the proletariat, which opposes any economic improvement in the situation of students, our first concern will be to work on behalf of students. Then there are our conflicts with outsiders. The Anthroposophical Society has existed, in fact, if not in name, since the beginning of this century, and all of its efforts have been positive, at least in as much as I myself was involved. Initially, we let our opponents upbraid us and do whatever they liked. Then, of course, they said that we had failed to disprove their statements against us. It is very difficult to make people understand that the burden of proof rests with the accuser, not with the accused. we have also repeatedly experienced very strange views coming from academics. Seemingly honorable instructors and professors, as well as pastors and other university-educated people, have uttered accusations against anthroposophy and anthroposophists, and their standards of proof reflect very poorly on their training as scholars. This is why I felt obliged to say that Professor Fuchs must be a very poor anatomist. How am I supposed to believe that he examines his specimens carefully if he did not even look at my baptismal certificate? Presumably, the way in which a person acts in one situation can be generalized to his or her other areas of activity. The mental habits revealed in this instance are typical of academic work today. What is now being presented in universities and technical institutes is essentially no better founded than statements like Dr. Fuchs. In general, academicians have developed extremely sloppy habits. What is now needed is to raise the conflict to a higher level. One of your fellow students suggested, quite understandably, that we need to become a fighting organization. I sympathize with this suggestion, but it really is not necessary. We must simply avoid what has already happened so many times in the Anthroposophical Society, namely the need to use heated words to defend ourselves against vicious attacks, as in the case of a Mr. von Gleich. Having read that I had given winter lectures, Mr. von Gleich invented a character named Winter and dragged him into the conflict in a very nasty way. I don't think it is overstating the case to call this behavior oafish, even if it is coming from a general. It is pure oafishness. To this day, anthroposophists who defend themselves and the society are still taking the blame instead of those who behave like Mr. von Gleich. In a number of instances, we were told that we were being too aggressive, in quotes. In many people's eyes, defending yourself in this way is aggressive. Without becoming a fighting organization or anything of the sort, we must nonetheless be alert to such attacks and repel them. You, too, must take a concrete and positive stand. And whenever you are obliged to defend yourselves, you must be backed up by others. It is important to track the symptoms of philosophical, academic, and religious activity in our time, and to take an interest in them. Consider this single instance. I was once obliged to give a similarly unfavorable description of some philosophical scribblings by Count Kaiserling. With incredible superficiality, he had introduced the crazy idea that I had taken Haeckel's views as my point of departure. This statement is not only objectively untrue, but also subjectively untrue. That is, a lie. Because we have the right to expect people who make such statements to check out their sources. If Count Kaiserling had bothered to look, he could have read the chapter I wrote on my discussion with Haeckel during my earliest years as an author. This chapter appears in my introduction to Goethe's scientific writings. It is all there for you to look up, if you like. And now Count Kaiserling has published a booklet entitled Der Weg zur Vollendung, The Path to Perfection. I will not describe this booklet in greater detail, but I would recommend that one or two of you buy it and lend it around. It would be a waste of money if you all bought it, but I do recommend reading it so that you get an idea of what Kaiserling says, which flies in the face of all wisdom. I do not recall the exact wording of the sentence, but it goes something like this, quote, "Well, if I was incorrect in saying that Dr. Steiner took Haeckel as his point of departure, Dr. Steiner could simply have set me straight because," please note this carefully, "I do not have time to research Steiner's specific sources," close quote. So this is the current state of scholarly ethics. Someone who is establishing a school of wisdom, in quotes, feels justified in publishing statements that he has not confirmed, because by his own admission, he has no time to research them. An author who considers himself well-bred, judging by his repeated conspicuous references to the Almighty, has been caught in the act. This unjustified lumping together of views is typical of the moral morass of modern writing. Our only recourse is to say to these people, quote, "No one is asking you to research Steiner's sources, but if you have no time to ensure that you know what you are talking about, keep your mouth shut," close quote. We must not succumb to any illusions here. We must abandon any conventional authority principle or the like, so that we can independently confront and inspect what is being said and written nowadays. Unfortunately, we will find much of it of similar quality. You will find it instructive to read a few of the sentences formulated by Rutte, the great expert on German studies from Berlin. I am referring to the form, not his view, which one can respect. We need not become a fighting organization, but we must be alert and ready to take a concrete stand against symptoms of decline in our culture. But does this require an organization of anthroposophical students? In such cases, we can take a stand simply as alert, decent, and academically conscientious individuals. If we are also organized for positive action, others will back us up. We do need backup, but setting ourselves up as a fighting organization would not be a smart move. The point is to work really seriously to improve current conditions. Part of this work is to make note of the terrible and very obvious damage we encounter in various fields. There is plenty of it, and to take a stand against it in any way we can. You can take positive action even in the smallest circles, simply by setting a small number of your peers straight with regard to such issues. In connection with the World School Organization, I told someone here yesterday that simply telling two or three other people about it would be a very valuable beginning. In the absolutely worst case, if you cannot find anyone else, tell yourself. One person's enthusiasm can make an issue accessible to others. We once experienced this very graphically in the case of a physician who was a member. His colleagues proved very receptive. We must avoid making enemies by strutting about like gamecocks and provoking conflict. We must not, however, avoid fights that others initiate. Claiming that we started the conflict is a very common tactic among our opponents, so we must have adequate backup to repudiate their claims. When we are attacked, we must defend ourselves. When we do so, however, we always get to read about attacks by anthroposophists. We must not allow our opponents to turn the tables on us. With regard to the World School Association, let me just add that I feel it would be best if the association were established independently, but allowed to emerge simultaneously in the Entente nations, the Allies in World War I, and neutral countries as well as in German-speaking Central Europe. This would require a certain degree of vigilance, but I believe we are capable of that. It would be especially important for Switzerland to expedite the process, and it would be good if it could happen now. I assure you, in terms of morale and so on, we are standing on the razor's edge. We would already be at war again if the opportunities that existed in 1914 were present again today. If the World School Association were founded in Germany today, and somewhere else only a week later, for example, we would not be able to pull it off. It simply would not happen, and it would be impractical to attempt it. On the other hand, we also must not deny our actual positions in any way. This institute of higher learning is called the Goetheanum. We gave it that name here during the World War, and the other nations involved in anthroposophy accepted it. We never denied our reasons for naming the independent school of spiritual science the Goetheanum. On the other hand, it would also not be good if what happens in Germany appears to be an imitation of what is happening on the other side. We in Switzerland must be fully aware that the founding of the World School Association will take a bit of skillful action in the context of international culture. It is imperative that the association emerge from nowhere, so to speak, in Central Europe, in the Entente nations, and in neutral countries simultaneously. For the moment, I cannot be sure that it will emerge in even one or two places. A committee was formed yesterday, but its enthusiastic members went to bed a few minutes after last night's gathering ended and postponed their meeting to tonight. We must wait and see if it happens. We have had a variety of disconcerting experiences that we will have to take into account. On the other hand, I am convinced that we will succeed if the necessary impetus and enthusiasm for what I and my friends have called, quote, passion for truth, close quote, can be found among your fellow students. I recently read aloud an article from the feature pages. I assure you that what happened recently in Stuttgart is only a beginning, not the end of the matter. I can also assure you that things will get much, much worse. I have been warning my friends here about this for a long time, and now what do I read in the feature pages? Quote, spiritual sparks are already flying aplenty, like flashes of lightning hissing toward the wooden mousetrap, and some clever reconciliation on Steiner's part is needed to prevent a real spark from putting an inglorious end to Dornach's pride and joy. Close quote. I believe we must become better organized, and above all more vigorous in our responses to such provocation, which will become ever stronger. I believe that you, my dear student friends, need to contribute all your youthful enthusiasm to the passion for truth we mentioned so often during this course. Youthful enthusiasm for truth has always been a very positive impulse in the development of humanity. May it be the same in the near future, for the issue you acknowledge as good and right. The end of part 4.